Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today. Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at TheMeatEater.com. Hope to see you at the show.
It's a Meat Eater podcast.
Welcome to Meat Eater Trivia, the only game show where conservation always wins. I am your host, Spencer Newarth, and today we are joined by special guest Clay Newcomb. Clay, how are you feeling about this round of trivia?
Man, I'm feeling confident, but just because I've been studying so much, but I feel good.
How do you study for Meat Eater Trivia?
Oh, just every day, man. Just cram every good. Day. Encyclopedia, good. Wikipedia, just
Google
everything.
Podcast.
All the PDFs.
Yeah.
Now, we don't have Steve Rinella here today, but we are joined by Giannis Poutelis, Ryan Callahan, Seth Morris, Chester Floyd, Corinne Schneider, and Corey Calkins. If you're not familiar, this is a 10-round quiz show with questions born out of Meat Eater's four verticals, which are hunting, fishing, conservation, and cooking, and there is a prize. Meat Eater will donate $500 to the conservation organization of the winner's choosing. Now, I'm going to give listeners a peek behind the curtain here. We are recording today's episode in early May, but it likely won't publish for a couple months. This is a break in case of emergency show. If we ever hit a stretch where we can't get together to record a new episode, this is what you're going to hear. Now, Giannis, why don't you make some predictions about the world like 2 months from now? Do you have like an NBA champion or who's going to be sloppiest at Seth's wedding or how many turkeys you're going to kill this month?
NBA, you know, I don't even know who's in the playoffs, buddy.
So I can't make a guess. Make a guess.
Pete Alonso has hit, let's see, July.
That's baseball.
Almost 20 home runs.
Oh, man. It's a heck of a pace.
Yeah, buddy. He's the man. What else do you want me to predict?
Whatever you want. Seth, who's going to be the sloppiest at your wedding when we record again? After the show, you're going to have an answer for us. But right now, what's your prediction?
Not Clay Newcomb. Phil Taylor, maybe. I could see it.
I wasn't invited to this. I wasn't going to say anything.
I can't remember if I'm invited.
Yeah, I think you are.
Wow, it's really awkward in here.
Phil, you're invited.
Phil, I'm inviting you.
You're invited.
Now you're invited. And you better get hamskied.
I don't know. It could be. I mean, I think Chester's going to go pretty hard.
What?
No. Seems like a safe bet.
He's just going to be so happy. He's just going to be so happy. Can't be putting the brakes on. I agree with that. I'll put a fiver in the chip bucket.
Like, anyone else want to lob any more predictions out there before we move on? It's your chance. You could look great or look like a fool.
Chester and I will have taken 14th place at the Fort Peck tournament.
Heck yeah. And that's like what, 120 teams or something?
100.
100.
Wow.
14th is dang good. Well done, boys, for getting 14th. I'm proud of you.
Thanks, congratulations. Spencer.
Thank you.
Thanks, yeah. Really. Did you guys want to take a minute to thank your sponsors?
Yeah. Humminbird, Minn Kota, Alumacraft, Mustang Survival, 13 Fishing.
Thanks, hey, guys. Can the Bear Grease podcast sponsor your boat?
What's that?
The Bear Grease podcast would like to sponsor your
boat.
That'd
be great. That'd be great.
Count us in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Talk to the financial people.
I'll do that. I'll send them an email.
Now we have some housekeeping before we get to trivia. On a previous episode where we talked about the 5 least visited national parks, Sean Curry wrote in to let me know that we are royally butchering the name of Isle Royale in Michigan. He said it's common for our crew and others to mess up by combining a French pronunciation with an English pronunciation. Here's what he means. If you want to make it French, you call it Isle Royale. If you want to make it English, you call it Isle Royale. The incorrect way, which is often how I do it, is pronouncing it Isle Royale, because that's making the first word English and the second word French. So we should commit to one or the other as a show and either call it Isle Royale or Isle Royale. What do you guys think?
Isle Royale.
I think we need to just Isle stick Royale with what we're comfortable with.
Isle Royale. He said that the James Bond movie Casino Royale was the bane for Rangers at Isle Royale, who then always had to hear it pronounced afterwards as Isle Royale, as I did.
Pick your fights, Rangers.
I get real particular about pronunciations.
Uh-huh.
And like then when what? I hear someone else do
like
it,
in another,
like Wachitas. So there's a mountain range.
Uh-huh. Wichitas.
And people call it Ouachita. And I mean, it's just like, come on, man. And right, then when I hear right, someone do like this, I'm like, come on, this is ridiculous. Isle Royale, come on.
Or like bag.
Bag?
Bag.
Bag.
Well, I'm specifically talking about like geographic acorns, names and stuff that have a unique pronunciation.
Like an acorn.
Like yeah, acorn. Yeah.
Would you care for some water?
It's Waukesha.
Yep, not New Jersey, Cal.
And with that, we are on to Meat Eater Trivia. Play the drop, Phil.
Look, I need to know what I stand to win.
Everything.
How's that?
You stand to win everything.
Suckers.
Oh. Whoa, where'd that come from?
Game on, suckers.
Actually, Chester has the game on suckers down. Let's hear it.
Game on, suckers.
Oh, dude, let's hear his voicemail. If you got something to say.
If you got something to say to my dad, say it at the beat.
Question one. The topic is biology. This first great question comes to us via Erica Christensen. If you have a question you think is right for Meat Eater Trivia, you can send it to trivia@themeateater.com.
Erica.
Well, it's spelled E-R-I-C-A. Does that change anything for you, Clay?
No.
No, okay. Can't trust any Erica.
Sorry, Erica.
According to a 1981 study in the Journal of Mammalogy, what North American mammal has the most color variations? Is it black bear, fox squirrel, eastern cottontail rabbit, or red fox? Again, this is according to a 1981 study in the Journal of Mammalogy. What North American mammal has the most color variations? See, black bear, fox squirrel, eastern cottontail rabbit, or red fox?
Easy.
We can't talk at all? I can't even give commentary about the question?
You can, go ahead.
So this is a 1981 study, so we have to calculate into our answer all the studies that have happened since then, over almost 40 years ago.
But I found it. I found it cited in like 2016 studies, which I think implies that this is like still the foundation.
Still relevant.
Yeah.
If the only study was 1981, they're like, man, this is not that great of a question. We don't even need to keep on. No, it's actually a great question. I'm thrilled about this question, Erica.
Yeah, I mean, they had color photography at that point, so that helps.
Yeah.
Does everybody have an answer? Go ahead and reveal your answers. We have Cal saying red fox, Chester saying black bear, Clay saying black bear, Corinne saying cottontail, Corey saying black bear, Seth saying black bear, and Giannis saying black bear. Nobody got it right.
Oh,
Erica!
Not
the damn squirrel.
The correct answer is fox squirrel.
No.
Son of a buck.
Fox squirrels are commonly found in gray, silver, brown, cream, red, beige, and black.
What did I tell you?
Additional variations can be found with squirrels that have differing colors of dorsal and belly hair. In Florida alone, there are thought to be six distinct colors of fox squirrels.
Not easy.
No, Kevin, I don't trust Erica.
Need a Kevin Murphy on speed dial.
Once you think about it, though, you're like, okay, they are probably the most diverse mammal in North America.
I don't spend that much time thinking about it.
Black bears have a lot of color.
Well, there's
not as many as
there's a lot of in betweens too. When you really dig into the bear nerds, you know, there's the blonde and the cinnamon and the red and the chocolate and the blue one up in Alaska.
Yeah, glacier bear.
Glacier bear.
But
fox squirrels alone in Florida beat that.
Like, if they're counting dorsal and ventral coloration too, then like every bear that's got a little white patch or variation.
Yeah, that would count too, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to accept black bear.
It's just a big squirrel. Hey, have you introduced everybody for this episode?
Yes.
I said, you did that? Okay. I said, now we don't have Steve Rinella, but we do have.
He even once again said who's not in the room, which is just bizarre to me. But we don't need to linger on it.
We are on to question two. The topic is deer. Name one of the five states where you're most likely to hit a deer with your vehicle.
Oh, gee.
Name one of the five states where you're most likely to hit a deer with your vehicle. A lot of quick answers in the room.
Oh, boy.
Now, you write down more than one, and I will not accept it. Mm. So with all that scribbling, Giannis, it better just be one state.
He's drawing the shape of the outline of the
state. I got my answer from Giannis's grin.
Okay.
I'm going based off of experience.
Yeah. Poker face.
Does everybody have an answer?
Yep.
Go ahead and reveal your answers. We have Cal saying New Jersey, Chester saying Wisconsin, Clay saying Michigan, Corinne saying Wisconsin, Corey saying New Jersey, Seth saying New Jersey, and Giannis saying Michigan.
I got to go with the home state.
The top five are West Virginia, Montana, South Dakota, Michigan, and Pennsylvania.
Oh!
Wow.
Striking out.
For the
Wisconsin wasn't in there?
No.
I absolutely knew Pennsylvania was in there, and then I absolutely knew New Jersey was in there.
There is way more deer hit in Wisconsin than Montana.
Tell you what, you talk to State Farm about their insurance policy and their claims.
Really?
There's no State Farms in Wisconsin. That's why.
Yeah. For the 15th year in a row, West Virginia ranked number one in the likelihood of hitting a deer with your vehicle. In 2021 there, the odds of it happening were 1 in 37. The months it is most likely to happen are November, October, and December in that order.
Yeah, but this is the stats from one insurance company.
From State Farm, who I have found.
Is there any correlation to the amount of State Farm locations there?
Do we need to discount? We're not going to look any deeper than this.
I mean, I'll just tell you right now.
Corey, look for an email.
Personal experience with State Farm Insurance, I wouldn't trust those suckers as far as I could throw them.
Here's the weird part.
They're the ones that introduced wolves into the lower 48 with the Clintons.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And here's the weird part about Clay arguing this, is he got it correct.
I just saw Giannis's grin and knew it was Michigan.
We are on to question
home
three.
State, that was a home state grin.
The topic is cooking. What does the acronym FIFO stand for? Again, this is cooking. What does the acronym FIFO stand for? That's FIFO. Is anybody confident on this one?
I worked at a Target, so... Kind of a hint. Not really.
How?
Wow.
That's a hint?
Phil said he worked at a Target, and that is a hint.
He was a security guard.
So I'm repeating it.
So.
Yeah, scared him away.
Nighttime security guard?
I can't even come up with a creative, dumb answer.
FIFO is what we're looking for.
I don't know. I don't.
Here's where I'm very surprised. Cal and Giannis worked in restaurants. I'm sure others in this room worked in restaurants as well. And they don't know what FIFO means.
Nope. Yeah, never once have I used it or heard it.
Does everybody have an answer?
Nope.
Who's going to come up with one? Clay is still
Just gibberish. I'm just writing.
You're doing
gibberish.
Good.
Oil, oil, Clay, oil.
Go ahead and reveal your answers. Cal says fresh in,
fresh no, out.
Fresh in, fresh out. Chester without an answer. Yeah. Clay saying fire, ice, fire, and oil. Corinne without an answer. Corey saying first in, first out. Seth saying fire food. And Giannis saying fresh in, fried out.
Fried
Phil,
out.
What does FIFO mean?
Corey's the winner.
First in, first out is
that
the correct
is correct.
Answer.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, this is the same.
That's. I'm not going to give it
Did
to you, but you were right there.
Giannis's was good. That
Corey,
was,
Corey got it
a
right.
Good answer.
That's right.
Good job, Corey.
You got it right?
Yes, sir. Yep.
This simply means that the first items you place in the fridge or freezer are the first items to come out. It's commonly used in restaurants, but is also a good practice for hunters and anglers to use at home.
Hmm.
Corey, did you was that a guess or it's you tough. Knew it?
Absolute guess.
Really?
God, I've worked good. In many well restaurants and had never heard that before.
You always use the first stuff last? Wait. You,
I mean, like,
first didn't in, do first
that? I'm sure I practiced like, that.
That stuff looks old. We it. Should probably use it.
Yeah,
exactly. I just don't think that anybody ever acronized it. No. Right? They would just be like, your chef would be like, first in, first out, dude.
Now, here's where I recently heard. I was watching an episode of Bar Rescue, and John Taffer comes in just lighting up the kitchen staff, as he likes to do, and he yells something about, don't you guys practice FIFO? So, he did. And John Taffer doesn't lie.
And he's got his own show. The writers of that show just made that up.
Maybe.
Yeah, no one's ever said that before in real life.
We are on to question four. The topic is varmints. This next great question comes to us via Clayton McFarland. You can never... Now, Clay, are you a Clayton or a Clay?
Clay.
Really?
Just straight up Clay.
Can you trust a Clayton?
You know, I've known a lot of good Claytons, but, you know.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think so.
We'll see based on the question. This is from Clayton McFarland. If you have a question you think is right for Meat Eater Trivia, send it to trivia@themeateater.com. What part of a raccoon is often used in the homemade moonshine distilling process? What part of a raccoon is often used in the homemade moonshine distilling process? Clay, how you feeling about this, Clay?
Man, I'm ashamed that I don't know this offhand.
It seems right up your alley.
Because the
raccoons
the
are in
alleys. Episodes that I'm doing for Bear Grease that have already happened by now. Talk a lot about moonshine.
Doing some moonshining.
Son of a gun.
Again, what part of the raccoon is often used in the moonshine distilling process? Does everybody have an answer?
I changed my first answer. I'm wondering if I should have went with my gut originally.
I'm going to give you a couple seconds, Chester. You want to switch
it? I'm keeping it.
Go ahead and reveal your answers. We have Cal saying the baculum, Chester saying the tail, Clay saying the baculum, Corinne saying the gonads, Corey saying the baculum, Seth saying the tail, and Giannis saying the fat. The correct answer is the baculum or penis bone.
All right. Now, what are they doing with it?
The baculum is placed at the outlet of a moonshine still to help the liquid flow smoothly into a collection vessel. If you want to learn how to get your own for your own still, go to themeateater.com and check out Clay Newcomb's video called How to Make a Raccoon Baculum Toothpick. Mm-hmm. He shows you how to cut it out of a raccoon, how to clean it, and how to whiten it.
I saw it. Great video.
Now, if I was a guy making moonshine, mm-hmm. I'd cut the tail off that raccoon and clean my pipes with it.
There you go.
That's what I would do.
Mm-hmm. And you'd have
pipe
a
cleaner.
Pipe cleaner.
Baculum.
When you said tail that, I was envisioning cleaner. Using the coon part, leaving the tail off. I was like, man, you got some big pipes.
I'd use the tail as a pipe cleaner. So...
We are on to question five. We'll get a scoreboard update after this. The topic is frontiersmen.
Steve wouldn't have known that.
Dude, I'm striking out.
Daniel Boone National Forest, which used to be called the Cumberland National Forest, is located in what state?
God, you're giving these all to Clay.
I feel like it, yeah.
Daniel Boone National Forest, which used to be called the Cumberland National Forest, is located in what state? Clay, do you feel like this one was given to you?
There, it should be, but... after this, I'll give a little commentary.
Okay.
On this.
Does everybody have an answer?
No. Please. You haven't even given me 3 seconds.
Still thinking about that raccoon baculum.
Yeah.
Daniel Boone National Forest, which used to be called the Cumberland National Forest, is located in what state?
I'm changing answer. Uh-oh. Last second.
Okay.
That tells you how confident I am.
Now, Giannis, can you read anything from his face?
No.
No.
Do
you know any states?
There's a lot of Cumberlands you can go off of.
There are, yeah. Well, I was thinking of the... Well,
there's only one Cumberland, brother.
Well, maybe, yeah. I know what you mean, but there's some towns. There's some landmarks.
Go ahead and reveal your answers.
We have Cal
saying Tennessee. Ooh. Chester saying Tennessee. Clay saying Virginia. Corinne saying Missouri. Corey saying Tennessee. Seth saying Maryland. Giannis saying Kentucky. The correct answer is Kentucky.
Clay, you changed it.
Good job.
Did you have Kentucky?
Okay, yeah, I did. Now, let me tell you why.
Yeah,
so when
it.
You go to the Cumberland Gap.
Uh-huh. That's like a tri-state area, right?
Yeah, so you pass through the Cumberland Gap on a trail, a foot mm-hmm. trail, which interestingly used to be a state highway that for years went through the Cumberland Gap because it's the best place to cross the mountains, so there was a state highway there.
Mm-hmm.
Then they learned the historical significance of it. In the 1990s, they built a tunnel through the mountain and rewilded the gap. When you're in the gap, you're on a foot trail, and you walk like 100 yards off the foot trail up to the top of this mountain, and you're at the corner of Kentucky, Tennessee, and Virginia.
Mm.
So the gap is actually, most of it's in Virginia. And then there's a lot more national forest in Virginia than in Kentucky, so that's why I went to Virginia. But I got smoked.
Now, do you know where the Cumberland name comes from?
Absolutely.
You do? We're going to learn everyone else here in a second. Cumberland National Forest was named after William Augustus.
Oh, you're not asking me?
Yeah, no.
He was a rhetorical
question. Go ahead, Clay.
You can do it without reading a script.
Yeah, go ahead, dude.
No. He was a chump from England.
A chump?
Yeah.
I've never heard anyone describe him that way, but you're right.
As in Cumberland was a chump.
Well, his last name was Cumberland, and when the guys came over that first explored the gap, they were loyal to the British and were trying to just look good with their leaders. And basically this, I forgot the guy's name that actually named it Cumberland, but it was basically a political favor to a guy who never set foot in the Cumberland Gap.
Now, Cumberland National Forest was named after William Augustus, the Duke of Cumberland. He had many nicknames. He had many nicknames, including the Butcher and the Bloody Duke, because of how he treated Scottish prisoners and civilians in war. When locals realized the area was named after someone who slaughtered their ancestors, they asked to get the forest renamed. And in 1966, that happened when Lyndon B. Johnson officially changed it to Daniel Boone National Forest.
That is funny because, yeah, there's a ton of Scotch over there, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, when a bunch of that country was named, we were British colonies and they were doing political favors to people. I hate naming stuff after chumps, and it happened a lot.
Phil, give us a scoreboard update.
Oh, I guess we're not going to name this the Clay Newcomb Memorial Podcast Studio after you. This game is not going as well as the last one we recorded, unfortunately. We've got Seth and Corinne and Chester have yet to make it onto the board. In second place with 1 point is Ryan Callahan, and then tied for first with 2 points are Clay, Corey, and Giannis Patelis.
Son of a gun! All right, we got a game here, fellas.
It's a tough one.
We got a game.
A lot of work to do.
There is room for comebacks, though, for sure.
Anyone can still win at this point.
That's right.
Nobody roots for somebody who's tied.
I kind of liked it that time when Steve asked all of us, or maybe you asked all of us, who we would give the winnings to if we won.
We'll get down to the end and see who's in it, and we can have that discussion.
All right.
Hey everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew, Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, Wild Game Recipes for the Grill, Smoker, Camp Stove, and Camp Fire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at themeateater.com. Hope to see you at the show.
We're on to question 6. The topic is deer camp. Now, this is an audio question. A few months ago, I played for you guys what I consider to be the worst hunting song ever written. What was it, Giannis? You remember? Did it scar you enough?
No, I got very lucky in answering it correctly. Some country dude.
It's a Luke Bryan.
It was song. Luke Bryan's Drinking Beer and Wasting Bullets. I am now going to play for you 1 minute of the greatest hunting song ever written, and you need to identify the artist.
Who sang that?
Yeah, I'm looking for the artist.
Very confident, Chester.
Shotguns
singing,
a pointing dog down in the old logging road.
Keep going.
And then he got three and looked back, grinning. I fumbled around and I tried to reload. The country was cold.
I wasn't looking around. I just caught the frantic arm motion by Chat there.
I totally saw it. I'm not gonna change my answer. I'll be honorable.
Put it on mine.
This is a good song.
Yeah.
It is a good song. Who sings this one?
Dwight Yoakam.
Oh, good.
Streets Bakersfield's favorite of mine.
Okay, so Corinne did give us a little tip.
Again, she did what she say. The greatest hunting song ever written. I'll give you this hint. It's not Luke Bryan.
Is it Luke now, Combs?
So you were the one that said this is the greatest hunting song ever
written. I'm deeming this the greatest hunting song ever written.
I like the passion of that.
Does everybody have an answer?
Sure sounds familiar.
No idea.
Is he more country or more western, you think?
Something in between.
Oh, Americano. I never knew that was from the Americano. Blues Brothers. And funny enough, I text my buddy Stephen Rinella. I says, hey, I'm out of ideas. I need a family movie. The whole family can watch. Oh, no. He replies with Princess Bride. My girls had already seen it.
Great movie.
And they loved it after we pretty much forced them to watch it. And Where the Red Fern Grows, which is very hard to find the original on streaming, I've found. Please, write in if you can help me with that. And then the third one was the Blues Brothers. So I go to my girls, I'm like, well, check out this, Lord of the Rings. They're like, oh, no, not into it. I'm like, really? You guys are crazy. And I'm like, all right, I'll just show you the trailer of the Blues Brothers. Let's watch this. I'm like, oh, sure, okay.
Is it because of the car wrecks?
I don't know what it, they said, we like to see guys doing stupid stuff. And, you know.
So yeah, like meat
and,
eater.
And, step yeah, outside. Next thing I know, my kids are hearing F-bombs, MF-bombs. Seeing new and used prophylactics, and holy cow, did I have a lot of questions to answer that evening. But
a lot of Nazis in that movie, too.
Yeah,
Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, we had to go through all that. And where's holy Ken? Moly.
But anyways,
educational.
Yeah.
I think Phil needs to be
country,
your go-to person to text for family movies.
Will you help
from
me
now
out
on
with that, Phil?
Of course, yeah, anytime.
Oh, thanks, buddy.
All right, back to the game of trivia, though. You've still not written anything down.
Just trying to delay.
Thought he was going to get sidetracked, and we'd just move on. Do you have an answer, Giannis?
Who sang that last one? Yeah, did anybody get that one right?
Mail tell us.
All right, go ahead, Justin, and reveal your answers.
Clay and Chester
hold on,
got it right.
I am going to pick one out. It's going to be... I'm not looking, I promise.
Oh, no way.
We have Cal saying Ryan Adams, Chester, and Clay saying the, and Corinne and Corey saying the Turnpike Troubadours.
Wow.
Seth saying Whiskey Myers, and Giannis saying Steve Earle.
Little thing about these guys, they just got back together.
Love it.
Whoa, you're real confident. Let's hear him read the answer, okay?
The correct answer is Turnpike Troubadours, and the song was The Bird Hunters.
Hey, they are from Oklahoma, just like an hour and a half from me.
Boy, we just had a serious turn in the game right there.
The Turnpike Troubadours released that song on their self-titled album in 2015. It's about a quail hunter who has to give up his bird dog when he follows a girl to the city. Medium.com agrees with me, saying The Bird Hunters is a phenomenal song, and it deserves the same treatment we give to Faulkner or Hemingway compositions.
Is that really what happens?
Yeah.
Well, he's not much of a freaking quail hunter if he gives up his dog to follow a girl to the
city.
He
gives it to his best buddy, Danny, and then he comes back eventually when him and the girl don't work out.
12 years later?
The dog is 12, has had 12 Decembers by then.
12 there was quite a bit.
I do not like this guy. You want to talk about chumps?
You got to listen to the song, man.
Oh, I'm sure it's a heartbreaker.
The best hunting song ever written.
Ugh.
We're on to question seven. The topic is fishing. Smurf meat is produced by this fish with blue flesh that's only found on North America's west coast. Smurf meat is produced by this fish with blue flesh that's only found on North America's west coast. Couple folks that knew it.
Smurf meat, you say?
Smurf meat. A lot of folks that are guessing.
You got this, Yanni.
Yeah, I guess that's not a...
Does somebody have a fruit-colored marker?
Let's go back to this dog conversation. How do you guys like that song?
Oh, it's great. He regrets the decision. Yeah.
He should regret that. Yeah, I mean, come on.
Wish I had the lyrics.
It's like those movies where the kid goes off to college and leaves the dog, and then the dog
at home?
Banjo and guitar, yeah.
Next time you do that, get out your phone, and you can text to me and Chester and Corinne and Corey. We'd all really appreciate that.
Yeah.
You text to me, too.
Okay. As long as you got that mullet.
Does everybody have an answer about Smurf meat?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
Go ahead and reveal your answers. We have Cal saying lingcod, Chester saying lingcod, Clay saying Dory, the Pixar fish, Corinne saying pufferfish, Corey saying marlin, Seth saying lingcod, and Giannis saying cod.
Ooh.
The correct answer is lingcod. And I don't think we're going to give it to you.
There's a lot of cod up there.
They're not even a cod.
Ouch.
We're not brutal.
Did you mean ling cod?
I was like, he wouldn't need ling in front of that cod.
Well,
it could be peacod.
You're right. Could have been Alaskan cod. Yeah. Black cod.
It's thought that about 20% of ling cod have blue flesh. Some biologists believe it's a product of a shallow water diet. While more recent studies say it's an indicator that the fish is experiencing nutritional stress. Either way, the blue color disappears when the meat is cooked.
You can get blue lobsters, too, which is weird.
Even more rare.
Yeah. But, I mean, a shallow water diet? So what happens to all the other fish with white flesh that live in shallow water?
I don't know. Nobody's really certain about it. It talks about how their diet is higher in chlorophyll, if that helps you.
More like borophyll.
We're on to question eight. We will get a scoreboard update from Phil after this.
So my answer, just if you're wondering, Dory was a blue fish. Yeah. Talking about kids' movies.
For those of you wondering.
Just keep swimming. Just keep swimming.
What kind of fish was it, Phil?
Blue tang.
A blue tang. We're on to question eight. The topic is hunting. This next great question comes to us via Chris Jasmine. If you have a question you think is right for Meat Eater, you can send it to trivia@themeateater.com. What state has the highest population of bighorn sheep? What state has the highest population of bighorn sheep?
Great question.
I'm going to get the answer right by looking in Corey's eyes because I know he needs it. Corey, look me in the eyes. Oh, okay, got it. Because y'all think it tough,
it's not Wisconsin,
makes me
Jester.
Think I got it wrong.
It's not Wisconsin.
Does everybody have an answer?
Not Michigan.
All right.
Go ahead and reveal your answers. We have Cal saying Idaho.
Ooh.
Chester saying Montana. Clay saying Montana. Corinne saying Colorado. Corey saying Montana.
It's
Seth saying Montana.
South Dakota.
And Giannis saying Colorado. Nobody got it correct.
Oh,
Wyoming.
Correct answer is Nevada.
Oh, no way.
Oh, wow.
Nevada has a population of roughly 12,000 bighorn sheep, which is made up of desert bighorns, Rocky Mountain bighorns, and California bighorns. This is nearly twice as many as the next closest states like Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, and Arizona.
I don't even apply in Nevada.
They give out the most non-resident tags as well. So.
No, yeah, wow.
It crossed my mind. I didn't write it down, though.
Phil, hit us with a scoreboard update.
I think it says a lot that there are some people with 1 point, and yet it's still anybody's game.
Uh-oh.
We've got Seth and Corinne with 1 point. Cal, Chester, and Giannis have two, and Corey and Clay are tied for first with 3 points.
Whoa! Right. This is a great game. This is a smoker.
Maybe got a little making too hard a question.
Making everyone's all of you at home feel good about yourselves.
That's right. Question nine, the topic is gear. This type of arrow, which often has extra fletchings that are extra long, is commonly used for bird hunting because it's designed to travel shorter distances.
Wow.
A few confident answers. Again, this type of arrow, which often has extra fletchings that are extra long, is commonly used for bird hunting because it's designed to travel shorter distances. Does everybody have an answer? That was quick.
I wouldn't be a good poker player.
Go ahead and reveal
it,
your
I got
answers.
It, I got it.
We have flu-flu. Corey saying judo, the guy in first place, got it wrong. The correct answer is flu-flu.
All I got to beat is Corey now.
While a regular arrow shot through a compound bow can go hundreds of yards, a flu-flu arrow maxes out at about 50. This makes it a popular choice for archers who want to hunt pheasants, ducks, and small game because flu-flus are easier to recover.
Chester actually drew one with his name there at the beginning
of this
game.
That's a good point.
Hey, I pheasant hunted one day in Kansas with flu-flus and a traditional bow.
How'd that go?
It was tough, man. I went into it with zero practice shooting flying stuff. Like, I just pretty much booked, like, an outfitted type hunt with wild birds. Went up there and got a bunch of shots. They were wild birds, but they were raised totally in the wild, but at these feeders. So they were, it was kind of, you know, they weren't, like, I got 30 shots in a day. So that tells you they probably weren't.
Sounds like a normal wild bird hunt.
Does it?
It was highly supplemented.
No. Yeah. Anyway. I actually contacted one bird in like 30 shots, and it didn't kill it.
Another real fun thing to do with them is go to your Home Depot and get some foam siding, cut it in circles, like a big round circle. You can toss those circles up. It's fun. Trad bow. Get a trad bow.
You're saying like the skeet version.
Skeet version.
Practicing with your flu-flu arrows.
We are on to question 10. Targets. Phil, give us a scoreboard update.
Well, we've got Clay in first with 4 points, but then, hot on his tail, we've got Cal, Chester, Corey, and Giannis all with 3 points.
Man, we could have like a four-person tiebreaker here. Oh, wow. I'm cheering for you guys. Really, well, I'm not
Clay's
cheering for Clay.
Clay's got to get it wrong.
I'm not cheering
for Clay. Is this
one
we're going to ask the possible winners where you might give your money to?
Tell us, Giannis.
Howl.org.
And why?
Well, because they're kind of new, up and coming, and boy, I feel like they're really hustling their tails off to keep us all educated on what is trying to take away our right to hunt in the states, in all of our states. And,
Clay is a big fan of them as well.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that. That's who I'd give to as well.
Howl?
Howl.
Howl for Wildlife, but it's howl.org. Yeah. A group called Howl for Wildlife.
Chester, who are you playing for?
I'm probably going to do... maybe like a local Montana thing.
Okay.
What do you guys think about like backcountry horsemen? Clearing trails.
Didn't know it existed.
I love it.
If public lands, waters, public land, water, and access, PLWA.
Yep.
Is a great one.
Yeah.
Either for like local.
PLWA or backcountry horsemen, I'd have to think about it.
Cal, what are you thinking?
This comes out in June.
This summer.
July is this summer. Oh, this doesn't even come out if you don't even want it to come out. I forgot about that. This is in case somebody else really screws up on the podcast. We can't put it in there. I don't know. What's going on in June? I'll give it to PLWA.
And Corey Calkins, what are you thinking?
We're going to have a low water year, so it's going to be a high conflict year.
Okay.
and PLWA does a lot of the litigation for folks who like to close off stream access and roads and stuff like that. They do a good job.
To keep it close to home and close to my heart, the Bob Marshall Wilderness Foundation.
All right. Mm. That is what's on the line here with question 10. The topic is biology. This question comes to us via Shane Lichty. If you have a question you think is right for Meat Eater Trivia, you can send it to trivia@themeateater.com. Gorillas, dogs, beavers, rabbits, and mice all practice coprophagia, which means they eat blank. Gorillas, dogs, beavers, rabbits, and mice all practice coprophagia, which means they eat blank. Nobody knew it. Seems like everyone's just taking an educated guess here.
Corey, you ever get one of those shirts? Just Bob Marshall standing there.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great shirt.
What a beautiful fella.
Yeah. Their shirts shrunk so bad. Every time I'd get one, I'd get to wear it for like a week and then finally have to throw it in the wash and ruin it and have to give it away.
Maybe Corey's donation will get them some higher quality fabric.
Mm-hmm.
Does everybody have an answer?
Chester's got a question.
Spencer, do you mind reading that one more time to make sure I'm
Gorillas, dogs, beavers, rabbits, and mice all practice coprophagia, which means they eat blank.
That changes it.
Okay.
You got some new intel?
It's not Copenhagen.
Not?
Fail.
You going to change your answer?
I don't want to.
This is the last question. Go ahead and reveal your answers. We have Cal saying poop, Chester saying grass, Clay saying feces, Corinne saying poop, Corey saying grass, Seth saying poop, and Giannis saying feces.
Their own feces.
The correct answer is feces.
All right.
Making Clay Newcomb today's winner.
Yes.
And it's just feces. They eat all kinds of feces, or they eat their own feces?
They eat their own. Now, while most animals do this to access nutrients they couldn't digest the first time around, dogs are the exception. It's believed they do this as an ancestral response to protecting pack members from parasites in their stool. A 2012 study estimated that about 16% of dogs regularly eat their feces.
I feel like not putting their own in front of feces is kind of like not putting Ling in front of the cod.
Not at all.
Not counting his.
I know. Can we get a definition of coprophagia?
Coprophagia, I think it means the practice of eating your own feces.
So it is your own.
Yes, but I'm not going to ding anybody for not writing your own.
Yeah, so you got...
I'm leaning Giannis's way on this one.
I mean, come on! They're not just out there eating feces.
You're eating your own.
But they are eating feces.
They are eating feces.
But not just any feces.
Oh, you're trying to get me off the board.
Clay Newcomb wins.
Yeah.
Clay Newcomb wins the game.
I see what's going on.
Yeah, 100%. You're just like, yeah, they eat dog feces, they eat fish feces, deer feces.
Spencer, what's the email for this one? How do people get a hold of the podcast?
If you want to write in and talk about who actually won this last question on this episode, write to
MeatEater@themeateater.com. Then Corey Calkins has to.
I think in the court of law, we'd be good.
All right, Clay, where are you donating the $500 again?
I'll go with Howl for Wildlife. Howl.org. They do basically what they do, and they are a young organization.
It's good to get the word out about them.
They highlight where anti-hunting legislation is going on, and they have a really streamlined process for people getting involved. So they're basically, you go in, you sign up just one time, and then you kind of have an account with them, and it's pretty easy. And then you can send well thought out letters to the appropriate people easily. And some people might be like, that's maybe not the best strategy, but it actually is a pretty darn good strategy just to pile pro whatever we're after emails into these people's inboxes. And they may not read them, but they know they got 4,000 emails that we're against this or for this.
And they've been doing stuff like hosting Zoom meetings for people that are planning on showing up at other
you know, government meetings to speak on behalf of said legislation or against it, and like hosting Zoom meetings to sort of better arm people so they can better articulate their thoughts about, you know, X, Y, and Z. So a lot of good education.
Yeah. And we're sending $500 their way. Well done, Clay. That's it for this episode. Join us next time for another round of Meat Eater Trivia, the only game show where conservation always wins.
Thanks, Spencer.
Thank you.
Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate Batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate Batteries. I use Interstate Batteries in my boats. I use Interstate Batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today. Hey everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at the Meat Eater.com. Hope to see you at the show.